Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit caneighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.
Hello and welcome to Outward, Slate's podcast about queer life, culture, politics, and today, spirituality. I'm Brian Lauder, I'm editor at Slate, and this week we've got a story of queer resistance in a place maybe you wouldn't necessarily expect it, the Southern Christian Church. Before we get to that, I just wanted to flag, in case you've missed her like I have, that Jules will be back next week. Yay. And also just a reminder to please send us advice, questions, and topic ideas for future shows. Now that we're weekly, we have a lot more room to cover the queer waterfront, as they call it, I think. So let us know what you'd like us to take on, whether it's serious, silly, or anything in between. You can always do that at outwardpodcast@slate.com. All right, we need to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more after that.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. From the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking try free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
All right, we're back. So for the past few years, we've spent a lot of time talking about the religious rights war on trans and queer people in the U.S. through increasingly aggressive legislation in red states that is designed to limit or end access to necessities like medical care, government identification, restrooms, as well as to ban queer-affirming books, drag story hours, and all the rest. You know, we've been talking about it on the show. I've got at least four story drafts on my desk right now about all of the cruel things that Christian conservatives are trying to do to queer queer people in this country, and it is a lot. But for however much they might like it to be the case, Christianity is not a monolith. In fact, it's a faith that a lot of queer and trans people call home, even in relatively challenging places like the South. That's the starting place for a recent story in the Washington Post that caught my eye, titled, "They Found Spiritual Joy, They Won't Have It Taken Away. An Uptick in Hate Crimes and Anti-LGBTQ Legislation Has Some Tennessee Churches on Edge, Even As They Provide Sanctuaries for Those Who Fear Being Attacked." The piece, by reporter Jessica Bateman, introduces us to a handful of churches in Tennessee that are LGBTQ-affirming, profiling both the healing and spiritual fulfillment that they offer to a community that historically has had issues with organized religion, as well as the hostility they are facing in this current political environment. Jessica is an investigative reporter and audio documentary maker based in Berlin, Germany. Her work focuses on issues of gender, extremism, faith, and belief systems around the world, and she's been published in The Guardian, the BBC, The Economist, and The Washington Post. I'm so pleased to have her on the show today to talk about this really important story. Jessica, welcome to Outward.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. This piece really did catch my eye. And in all of this, you know, everything I mentioned at the top there, cruel stories, negative stories, it was nice to read something about a place where there's like a little bit of queer resistance happening, even in the midst of the attacks that those churches are experiencing. So I like to start these kinds of interviews by just asking a personal question, which is, what sort of drew you to be interested in this particular story? Because as I say, it's not a subject that we see covered as much as it should be.
Yeah, well, first of all, I wasn't brought up in any particular religious environment. Uh-huh. I was brought up in a very kind of like secular, atheist mm-hmm. family. So I don't really have any skin in the game, as it was. But I've always found the topic of religion and how it interacts with society very, very interesting. And I think like what you mentioned in the intro about there's a lot of like focus at the moment about right-wing Christians, Christian nationalism, very ultra-conservative traditions. And I think it's easy to forget that not just in the US, but also in other parts of the world, there is a very long tradition of religion actually being at the center of progressive social movements as well.
Right.
And I mean, for example, in the US, lots of historically black churches were really central to the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm based in Berlin, and in the Nazi era, a lot of churches and Christian leaders were actually like some of the most central figures in the resistance movement to the Nazis, which sadly the overall resistance movement wasn't very big. And I mean, even within like other Abrahamic religions, for example, in Judaism, there's a very, very long anti-fascist tradition.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Within Jewish communities. And I think it's something that can be quite easily overlooked when all the focus is on more conservative churches who have quite loud voices.
Yeah. I did a little bit of this in the intro, but before we get into the specific churches that you sort of profile, I wondered if you could give us just a little bit of the political backdrop in Tennessee. You write about it in the piece where these people are living and worshiping. What's the sort of, you know, state of play in terms of the legislation that you found when you were talking to folks?
Well, Tennessee, it's how would I phrase it? I suppose it's been the kind of the leader of some of that anti-LGBT laws that have passed in the US. I mean, for example, there was the attempted drag show ban. Mm-hmm. That was obviously like one that really kind of ricocheted like around the world. It got struck down.
Right.
Then, of course, there was the ban on affirming care for transgender minors.
Right.
And now the current legislative season is starting, and I think we're just going to have to wait and see what they try and come up with next.
Yeah, I mean, there's, as we've been talking about on the show, there's over, I think most recent number I heard is like 550 across bills across the country of this sort of thing. And I'm sure a bunch of them are in Tennessee as well.
Yeah, 550. Wow.
So you start the piece in Nashville at a church called The Table, which that is a wonderful name for a church. I really, really like that. And we meet Pastor Don Bennett. Could you tell us just about what you learned there and sort of what the queer and trans members who attend that congregation are looking for?
Well, it's a really new church.
Okay.
It only started actually during the pandemic. It's a very, very young congregation. And this church really caught my eye. I came across it by accident on social media because I was researching some far right groups. And one of my sources, who's an anti-fascist researcher, sent me a link to a protest that had happened outside the table. And I looked at this church and I realized that it was like a specifically like queer focused church. And I thought, oh, that's very interesting. And there has been like a real rise around the world, like in denominations becoming more affirming mm-hmm. and accepting of queer people. But this was the first time that I'd come across a church that was really centered on them and also really centered on the issue of healing from spiritual and religious trauma. And another thing that was really different about this church that I really like is the sermons start at 7 p.m. on a Sunday, which I just think that really like suits a queer church.
Instead of the typical like 11 a.m. or earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And for safety reasons as well, it's kind of... It's kind of like tucked away behind a bigger church. So it kind of feels a bit like a secret evening gathering. It has like a very kind of like cozy, like welcoming feel to it. And it's a traditional kind of 150-year-old like Lutheran wooden beamed stained glass windows kind of church. But she's decorated it with like lots of rainbow touches, like lots of affirming artwork. There's like a kind of rainbow colored Jesus at the door when you come in. And yeah, for example, like a sticker where you can write your pronouns on. And yeah, one of the main characters I interviewed, Jessica, who's a transgender woman from Nashville. Well, she was brought up in like quite a conservative religious background. She was brought up Southern Baptist. And she said that she'd never heard Pastor Dawn, who runs the table, she'd never heard her preach about sin or hell. Like, it's all about love and it's all about healing and positive messages. So yeah, pretty different from a lot of churches.
Yeah, you even mentioned that they use a translation of the Bible called the Inclusive Bible that I'd not heard about this, but it's gender neutral, I guess, completely in the language.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it either until I worked on this story.
A little bit more about the theology. You write that Bennett says that Jesus is a proud liberal who cares deeply about those shunned by mainstream society. Can you speak a little bit, just a little more about like sort of what the theology is there? You did a bit there, but I'm curious if you can say more.
I mean, like Jesus himself never actually like said anything about homosexual relationships.
Right.
And I know the parts of the Bible that are interpreted for justifying like anti-LGBT positions like are from the Old Testament.
Right.
Whereas the argument is that actually Jesus's main message was all about love and that everyone is created equal in the eyes of God. And you're only going to fall out of grace with God if you're a bad person. He doesn't say anything about who you love or what kind of intimate relationships that you have.
Right. Yeah. And so that's sort of what the table is focused on. So you write about how sort of alongside the growth of these affirming congregations, and you do give us some statistics about how that's been changing, especially like within the Methodist Church, for example. There was just a schism that we covered. I wrote about that in Slate a few years ago around that affirmation thing. But you say alongside that, there's been an uptick in sort of reactionary violence, right, against these places. I love this line that you have in the piece about the table. It requires vigilance to maintain her spiritual haven. When she gives communion, she walks to the pews. This is Pastor Bennett. She walks to the pews instead of inviting people to the pulpit because not everyone feels safe showing their face on the live stream. Tell us a little bit about this uptick in violence and how, you know, that's one reaction to it. But what other reactions are you seeing from parishioners and pastors?
Yeah, so when I first started researching this story, I did a little search for news reports about attacks on affirming churches. And I found a lot of local stories from around the US, and they were all from 2023 and a few from 2022. And quite a lot of them were linked to when churches had hosted drag events, like Drag Queen Story Hour. And yeah, so part of that whole kind of moral panic about drag performances. And actually, it's kind of interesting. After my story came out, there was some research that got published that week, which I didn't have access to at the time of reporting and writing. But it's GLAAD and the Anti-Defamation League Center. They found that from June 2022 to January 2024, there were at least 66 incidents in which religious institutions were targeted over their perceived support for and inclusion of LGBTQ people. And yes, so there's been things like arson, there's been like vandalism, there's been like threatening letters, emails, phone calls, not specifically like in the South either. Like I found incidents all over. I found incidents in Boston, California, Ohio.
Yeah, so it's really growing everywhere. Let's take a quick break and then we will be back with Jessica Bateman to talk more about her excellent article.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
All right, we're back. So the next church that you sort of profile in your piece is the Covenant of the Cross, Pastor Greg Bullard. Tell us about his ministry. It's another one where it's sort of tucked back behind a mall or something like that. Reminded me a lot of, there's a lot of Southern gay bars that are like this sort of hidden up these dirt roads. But I guess the affirming churches are sort of taking a page from that. So tell us about Covenant of the Cross and what you found there.
Yeah, so Pastor Greg, he's a really interesting character, and he is Nashville's longest serving openly gay pastor.
Right.
He used to pastor with the MCC Church, which is one of the original, let's say, LGBT affirming denominations in the US. And he now runs his own affirming church. It's like non-denominational evangelical. And yeah, they're a really great bunch of people, really like diverse, like different ages, like different backgrounds, like different ethnicities. It was just a very like interesting, friendly, wide-ranging bunch of people. And not everyone there is queer themselves. There was people that I spoke to at that church who said that they just like it because it's more positive and less restrictive environment than other churches that they've been to in the past. Yeah, I met one woman, her and her wife were driving there from, oh gosh, I can't remember exactly, but like somewhere in like East Tennessee, like up towards Kentucky, and they were like driving there like every weekend.
Commuting, right. I loved one of the great quotes that you got in the story. I think this is from a straight person who said that this is the most hated group in America, but they managed to be the most joyful. I thought that was such a lovely sentiment. One of the things that you do in your piece that I think is really smart is, you know, remind us that while churches are becoming more affirming, LGBT people have like sort of trauma with religion, right? And also therefore maybe a resistance to being involved with organized religion with churches like this, which is an important part of that dynamic. One of your sources, Amy Sadler, sort of represents that part of it, where it's someone who was sort of pushed away from religion and then has found her way back. Can you just tell a little of her story? Because I thought it was so lovely.
Yeah, Amy had a really devastating story, actually. And so she grew up in a historically Black United Methodist congregation. And the way she described it, it was her entire life. She did youth leadership in the church, and they were funding her scholarship to college. They'd supported her loads. She'd gone and spoken at the United Nations representing them. And her biggest ambition was she wanted to become a youth pastor. And then her first year of college, she got outed to her congregation. And yeah, her pastor took her to one side, and she was just like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being in love with another woman. And the pastor basically told her to not come back, and that she wasn't allowed to work with the youth anymore. It took away her scholarship from college, so she had to drop out of college. She was unhoused at one point because she'd had to leave an abusive relationship. And she said herself that yeah, she'd always thought that the church would be the place that would support her and that would look after her if she was in need. And now they told her that they wouldn't do that because of who she was. And yeah, I think it just really demonstrates like how devastating that can be for some people. Like when you're raised in a community and raised in a very like religious environment, and to be like rejected by your community like that, and especially like if you still feel some kind of faith, and if you still feel some kind of connection to God. And Amy said to me that the whole time, like after she was forced to leave the church, like she was still praying, she was still reading the Bible, like she was trying to kind of like reconcile like with God, being like, was this you, God, or was this these people in the church?
Yeah.
And I completely understand as well, like some people that have had very traumatic rejections like this, they're never going to want to step foot in a church again. And yeah, that's completely reasonable. But there was also a lot of people that I spoke to that they said once they started going to an affirming church, it did give them like a very specific type of healing, which they didn't feel that they could get from any kind of traditional avenues. And so, yeah, I found that really interesting. And I think it goes back to what I said at the beginning as well, of like this kind of one viewpoint of one, this one kind of like dominant image that we have of Christianity at the moment. And we forget that for, you know, hundreds of years, actually, like churches like have played like a very important role in like looking after people, and a very important role in social justice.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that your piece does that I thought was so important, because a lot of times stories like this will just focus on the cities, and you made a point to focus on rural areas too, right? Which is a part of the story. And you take us sort of, I think you said an hour and a half outside of Nashville to Cookeville. It's the United Church of Cookeville. Talk about why first you thought it was important to tell that, you know, rural side of the story, but also what's specifically going on there. What are the differences in what they're experiencing trying to be affirming in a place like that versus, you know, a place like Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with the kind of like the cultural, like urban and rural divides. I mean, I'm from Europe, but we have like similar dynamics here as well. And I mean, I know in Nashville, like the whole time I was there, like people would say to me like, oh, but you know, Nashville's like a bit different. You know, it's a bit more liberal here. We have like the entertainment industry. There's like lots of people from like other parts of the country. And yeah, so I thought it was, really important to tell the story of people that maybe like don't have those same kind of networks and those same kind of support structures, and perhaps might feel a little bit isolated if they're attacked for their stance on affirming LGBT people.
Yeah. And so what did you find at that particular church? That what's life like there for them?
Well, they have a much lower profile than some of the churches in Nashville. I mean, Pastor Bennett at the Table, and then like Pastor Bullard at the Covenant, like they do quite a lot of media appearances and quite a lot of advocacy. And yeah, the church in Cookeville, like they definitely have like a bit of a lower profile. They keep their head tucked down a little bit. They do outreach work at the Cookeville Pride every year. But apart from that, they're not really like these like very kind of like big faces in local media. Like I'd say it's like the kind of church that you'd have to seek it out. You'd have to know about it.
But that must be so important for, especially in smaller places, right? Like that, right? It's like probably one of the few places in town where you can count on acceptance for sure. It was so lovely to read about it.
Yeah, there are actually 3 affirming churches in Cookeville in total.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, one of them's a Unitarian Universalist church, which isn't strictly Christian as such. But yeah, I think that's also a really important thing to point out, that even in a lot of like smaller rural areas, like you still are going to find like these little pockets of community. Because yeah, I think it's very easy to think of like rural churches in Tennessee, like all being like Southern Baptist Convention. But
no, that's really encouraging. I mean, I'm actually from the rural South. So, that was, you know, 20 years ago now that I live there. And so it's actually, I'm like learning something from this, right? That like, it's not maybe the same as it used to be. So that's actually wonderful to hear that this kind of affirmation is growing, even outside of the cities, right? That's really great. I wonder if there's anything in this reporting that really surprised you or that sort of stuck out to you that you would want our listeners and then readers, because I hope our listeners will go read the piece, to sort of take away from it. What really struck you as like the most important thing that you found in this?
I think the most important thing that I found was it really opened my eyes to, I suppose, like the variety of approaches to Christianity that exists, like even within kind of stereotypically conservative areas.
Yeah.
And also like the real range of personal beliefs that people hold, like within the spectrum of Christianity. I mean, for example, there was one person I met, like they told me, oh, I don't think I believe in God, but I believe in Jesus and his teachings. And it was a real, I suppose, like eye opener, just what like a broad spectrum of Christianity is out there. Because yeah, as we've said a few times already, the kind of, I'd say like the dominant image that we get in a lot of in a lot of media is like more conservative approaches to Christianity.
Yeah, that's a really important reminder, I think, especially in this, again, in this moment of kind of political maybe dominance by that stripe. That's really not all of it at all. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the show. This was really wonderful. Is there a place people can follow your work or any upcoming stories or projects that you wanted to flag for our listeners?
I'm still vaguely active on Twitter. occasionally. Yeah, I'm at Jessica Bateman on Twitter, although not as active as I once was on there, but I think that's the case for a lot of
that's
us
with
at the
everybody.
Moment.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, well, I hope our listeners will absolutely go check out your work. The story, again, that we were talking about today in the Washington Post, the headline was, "They Found Spiritual Joy, They Won't Have It Taken Away." It was by Jessica Bateman. Again, Jessica, thanks so much. This is a really important story, and I'm glad we got to talk about it.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
All right, that is the show for today. As always, please send us feedback and topic ideas and advice questions to outwardpodcast@slate.com, or you can reach out via Facebook or X at Slate Outward. As always, just a reminder that by joining Slate Plus, you can get ad-free podcasts, extra segments on shows like Working, and you'll never hit a paywall on the Slate site. To learn more about that, you can go to slate.com/outwardplus. Our show is produced by Palace Shaw. If you like Outward, please help us out and subscribe in your podcast app. Tell your friends about it. Rate and review the show so everybody can find it. Until next week, stay gay, everybody.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit c8neighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.